And we're still here in the Castro District of San Francisco with Joseph Shamro with part two of our two-part podcast called On Exiting the Gay Lifestyle. Joseph has about two decades of chastity under his belt at this point and is a very courageous evangelist of the Catholic faith. And you can actually also find this podcast fully on video on Census Fidel. And if you want to watch this actually with us two talking in the cafe, you can find this at Census Fidelium. And please do be aware, this is another one of those PG-13 weeks. We're not having to explain everything that he did in that part of town by any means. So it's not an R-rated podcast today, but it is a PG-13 rated podcast yet again. So just be aware of that if there's any families listening out there. And jumping right back to where we left off last week. Now, I want to challenge you on something. You said nobody's born gay, and I gave a sermon about a month or two ago on transgender, and I mentioned a Protestant girl who was engaged at maybe 18 or 19. Actually, she wasn't Protestant at the point. She was a practicing lesbian. She was engaged to get married to another young woman and had a big conversion along the line. And one of the lines I quoted in my sermon, it's actually, you can find this on YouTube, it's called Love is Love. And she said, I could hold on to my sin and reject God, or I could turn to Him all the debt that I'd racked up living like I lived. Didn't have time to deny if I could trust Him, so that was it. I knew what I wasn't going to do because it was right there. I was amazed at the grace He showed me. People say to me all the time, I was born this way. I say, okay, yeah, me too. You're not born with right affections. That's why Jesus had to come. You feeling a desire for sin just proves you need grace like me. And so, Joseph, that was sort of the line that got me thinking again of maybe people are born with this in the sense that she would say, you're not born with the right effect. Now, she's a Protestant, a strong evangelical now, and that was sort of her apologetic looking back at all these people who say you're born with it. She said, that's why Jesus had to come. You feeling the desire for sin just proves you need grace like me. Any thoughts on that?
I don't believe, I mean, the quick answer is I don't believe that anyone is born gay. No. That always happens later. Now, people, their early memories that they have go back so far, they just feel like, well, I always felt that way. And the way I got to this point was actually through a dissident Jesuit, John J. McNeil. He's dead. But he was kind of the James Martin of the 70s and the 80s. More radical, I would say.
Okay.
And what James Martin said is that the catechism is wrong because it says that...
James Martin, the guy in the 70s.
Oh, I'm sorry. John J. McNeil said that the catechism... Well, Martin says it too. The catechism is wrong because it says that the homosexuality is an intrinsically disordered condition. And he was saying that God would not make someone disordered. That is not a loving God.
Right.
Therefore, most people who are gay would rather reject the catechism than accept that God is unloving.
Right.
And I believed for a long time that God was loving and that God created me gay. Even after I had that death experience,
okay.
I still bought into that. Because I just felt it was so much part of my identity. Even though I didn't want to have sex with men, I just kind of felt like that's the community, that's my community, and I didn't want to give it up.
And even though this is the most politically incorrect part of our interview here, could we maybe say that things started going disordered in certain kids even in utero, or
no.
Do you think it's later?
No, I don't believe that.
Later?
No. It's all later. With boys...
So like purely environmental?
Yeah. With boys it has to do... Okay, let me qualify that. Some, and I'm not going to talk about girls because I don't know the lesbian experience.
Sure.
But some men are, let's say, born maybe with a more sensitive disposition, more artistic, and I was. And that kind of sets you up. a little bit. But if you don't have the other stuff, you're not going to tip that way. It's a perfect storm. Like I said, you got sensitive, artistic, you know, whatever, not sporty, but then you also have, you know, bullying boys, disinterested father. It's all that. And even then, it doesn't mean you're going to have a gay boy, a gay kid. But with just some people, it just clicks that way. So, you know, I had to accept that whatever happened, and that's hard. That's because I talked to so many gay men when I was in the life and out of the life, and you look at them straight in the eye and you say, "How was your relationship with your father?" Fine. And then you start talking a little. Well, you know, my dad, this, you know, my mother was kind of like, they weren't getting along. But, and then all this stuff.
But they initially say fine.
So, and I would have too. So, and then all this stuff starts coming.
Why would you have? Just because you know that's kind of like the eighth grade conservative answer, it's always your dad?
No.
Why?
Because that's the wound. That's
covered over.
That's the hard place to go.
You don't want
to
go.
That's the place you don't want to go.
Right.
That's the place you don't want to go.
Right.
So, with anybody.
Of course.
So, I would just say no, just so I didn't have to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to recommend him, God rest his soul, Dr. Joseph Nicolosi. I got to know him, and I got to know his work, and this is what he talked about, was the father wound, which doesn't necessarily, that's kind of a blanket term, or, you know.
And he wrote thousands of pages on this, so yeah. can you maybe give a 2-minute synopsis of those thousands of pages?
He kind of said what I said, that it's, there's no one is born gay,
right,
but you have these certain factors that will contribute to a boy, and then you need to do this reparative, they call it conversion therapy, which they're trying to ban all over the place. So you're trying to do this reparative therapy, which is like a psychoanalytical, you know, procedure where you do go back and you do talk about that stuff.
Okay.
And I mean, through that, you heal it. Because then you understand. Because I always just thought I had been born gay. It's like, somebody likes chocolate ice cream, somebody likes strawberry ice cream. It wasn't more complicated.
But ironically, it was the liberal Jesuit who helped you see that wasn't the case.
True. Because I didn't agree with it. So,
but no, he really did help you see that God, a loving God wouldn't do that.
Exactly.
That part was true, right?
Exactly. And he wanted to go the direction which James Martin wants to do, is that it's not intrinsically disordered, it's differently ordered.
Differently ordered. That's James
Yes, Martin. That's where he wants to go.
Right.
And I was kind of like, no, because I lived such a hardcore life, I really could accept that gay sex was bad, that it was wrong, and that because it was, I could just look at my body and figure it out.
Right.
So I knew that there was some truth, that there was truth there, although I couldn't receive the whole truth. But I could accept some of that truth. So I knew that it wasn't correct.
And you say hardcore. I want to challenge you on something again there. You know, some of the critique against you online that I've read is, you know, this guy was involved in gay porn and all these different things. He led an extreme lifestyle. Of course, someone who burnt out at the fringe levels, even of the Castro, and the extreme lifestyle of gay porn and prostitution, of course anyone's going to get burnt out in a lifestyle like that. But some people might criticize your mindset, but I'm just a normal gay man who has been faithful with one partner for 5 years.
Right.
How do you answer your criticizers? Is that the right word? Criticizers? Who say you have just gone from one extreme of the gay lifestyle to this extreme of crazy Latin mass Catholic.
My critics.
Critics, thanks. Critics is the word.
I understand their point, but I did try the other stuff too.
The middle of the road.
I did. I did try to settle down with a partner. And what happens... Okay, what happened with me, with the partner, is when... Because there's love there. There was love between me and my partner. And when I saw that what both of us were going through in order to have sex, the toll it was taking on our bodies, I was like, how can I love this person?
Even just non-extreme gay sex was...
No, just vanilla. Mm-hmm. Vanilla.
It was still dangerous.
Yeah. So, I know, people don't know natural law, and I don't know it either, but I lived it. So...
It you lived just, against it so...
It just intense. Doesn't go. Things don't go there. Right.
The plumbing doesn't work.
Exactly. God... I could never figure this out. God made the human body, the male and the female, and when it's beautiful marital sex with the possibility of a child, it's beautiful. When you start doing weird stuff, it hurts.
Then why didn't you stop with it hurt?
Well, because everybody else I knew was doing it had the same problems, and you work it out. You just figure out a way to do it catches up with you eventually. And a lot of older gay guys don't do this stuff.
They're done. They're over.
Yeah, they don't do it.
And not to say everyone out there in the Castro is possessed, but was there a spiritual aspect to all this?
Oh, yeah. Because everybody, I don't care who they are, has the innate human desire for transcendent reality, that there's something beyond this, and even here. And I would just see it with... Like, if you look at, like, the singer Madonna, so much she did was, like, a mockery of the Catholicism
right.
that she was raised in.
Right.
And you see it here, just even in the extreme of, like, the bondage thing, where you see people on crosses, and it's this weird martyrdom. I always say it's a martyrdom with no redemption.
Okay.
You know? And you're, like,
that's
acting out all of this stuff. But it doesn't get you anywhere. Actually, it gets you just worse off than when you were doing it. But you think that...
Not to mention hell. Even on Earth, you end up not happy.
Yeah, you just keep doing it. You just keep doing it. There's so many avenues.
You wonder who
here.
They're really in bondage to, huh?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, that's it. But you don't know. You don't... It's a world that's turned. It's a world that's turned upside down.
Right.
But when you're, it's like Alice in Wonderland. But when you're here, you don't know it. You just don't. It's not like people are here and they're like they know they're doing evil things and these gay people are evil. And
right.
There's certainly people here that are wicked.
Sure.
But a lot of them, they just don't. They don't know. And that's why I have charity for them.
And how do you outreach? I know you haven't scampered away from this community. You still go. You bring rosaries. You go even the BDSM praise with Jesus Loves Gay Men t-shirts. Tell us about your outreach a little bit.
I just started doing it because there wasn't a place within the church. I mean, there's courage, but courage is not apostolic. So,
and by not apostolic, I mean they expect you to come to them, to their meetings.
Yeah.
And there's a place for
they
that.
Don't go out. They don't, and they have reasons for that.
Yeah.
And I understand it. But they don't go out.
Your job's to go out.
Yeah, I guess it is. But by default. So I didn't.
The prophets were never happy with their assignments either.
And I wanted to do that. Because no Christian reached out to me when I was in the gay
community.
Right. Nobody.
That's what you do out there.
I just show up, hand out rosaries, hand out little sacramentals. Nothing's blessed. But just hand.
All blessed.
And I'm always worried about that because I don't know what they're going to do. Yeah,
I
don't know what it's going to be. It's profaned. Because that's part of that scene is
okay, that's smart. So tell us about worst reaction, best reaction you've got out in your ministry on the streets.
Okay. Worst reaction, I can't tell you about. But pretty bad. But hey, I would have done the same thing. Best reaction is, you know, people hug me and they're so appreciative because they had a rosary when they were a boy, you know, they were an altar boy, or they had a miraculous medal and they don't have it, or they haven't thought about it in years, but it's just seeing it is like, wow. And my hope is, and I'm not delusional at thinking, oh, I'm going to convert this person right here and now. It's possible.
It's a seed planted for their conversion.
Right. You know, I'm hoping that on a dark, lonely night, and they're in their apartment or whatever, and they have that rosary, and they just think, wow, this is... you know, this is something that I can hold.
It's one ray of hope in the dark world.
And you never know. The thing I worry about is, and this is where I'm calling out the bishops, we need to provide sound, truthful, loving ministries for these people.
What's lacking?
Everything. with you know, I never, ever, ever thought I would get into this topic, because I thought when I left the Castro and, you know, went to the Catholic Church, that sort of the very gay affirmative stuff was peculiar to San Francisco. But then when I started writing about it, people started sharing all these stories with me from New York, LA, Chicago, Dallas, you know, Miami, you know, different cities.
Of priests just ratifying people in their sin.
Oh yeah. Facilitating it. And then I just uncovered, and this is a whole other topic, Father, but I just uncovered this whole network of gay affirmative ministries.
Okay.
And what James Martin has done is, because he speaks at all of these, he's sort of brought them, not that they were in the shadows, but he's very much brought them to the forefront, and what their motives are and what their goals are. So I'm always very worried about a person who's gay and wants to go to the church, what they're going to do.
So what would you say to them? Because this is my new line that I am now putting on Facebook Times, about 3 weeks only. But when people say the church, this is my only liberal line that I'm re-uptaking from my maybe 20 years ago. But I say, you are the church. I mean,
right.
Really what you mean is the hierarchy. You are the church.
Right.
So what is the answer you have for gay men out there who are finally tired of sin, want to reestablish a relationship with Christ in his church, return the sacraments? Okay, so they're not supposed to go to these New Ways ministries, things that ratify them in their sin.
They don't know that, yeah.
What do you say to them?
I say what I said before. It sounds so easy. Go to the out-of-the-way parish that offers the traditional amens.
I didn't make him say
it. It sounds simple, but it's true. Not that that's going to be perfect there. That you're,
I don't know. Traditional
nine out of ten times.
Traditional sort of had a stereotype of rejecting fringe people. I mean, were you treated by? I mean, that's nice. You had some good priests. How were the lay people? Well, they probably didn't know what type of lifestyle you had lived.
Actually, the lay people were really nice.
Awesome.
I mean, I remember the first experience I had at a TLM mass, and I showed up. I didn't know what a missal was. Mm-hmm. I thought that was that little paper thing, you know. So I was sitting, you know, and it's so weird, because when you go to, like, from the Novus Ordo, which is older ladies and some of their husbands that they drag along, and I mean, it's an old group.
Right.
And then I went to the traditional Latin masses, like families and young guys and young women. And I, you know, what is this? The Catholic Church. So I remember the first mass I went to, there was a dad there and the mom there and some kids, and I didn't have anything because I didn't know. I just showed up. The priest told me to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And he handed me the missal. And it was just so nice. There was, I don't know, it was wonderful.
And how about even before you get to the Mass, just the initial level of repentance? What would you say to a guy who's, you know, slept with 1,000 guys out there? Does Jesus still love him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Jesus loves you. You cannot do anything that will make Jesus stop loving you. So, but the only thing you have to do is you have to say yes, and I don't want that life anymore. And I want, you know, it's life or death, and it's, you know, it's gay or God.
Okay.
So you can't have both.
And what about that speed bump, that initial, say, threshold that people have to get over for a huge confession? The priest is going to judge me. He's never going to even know what these horrible things are. What would you say to someone like that who's just terrified to make a confession of a whole lifetime of wacky sins?
I don't know. Well, okay. This helped, too.
Wacky's not the right
word. Well, this helped, too. I didn't like the reconciliation rooms where you were face to face with the priest. And those, so I went to, when I finally made my confession at a more traditional parish, you know, I was in the confessional and I just really felt that, you know, I really was speaking, not speaking, but that I really was confessing my sins to God.
Awesome.
And, you know, the priest, I mean, I didn't, it's not that I didn't need feedback or that I needed spiritual direction, but I just needed absolution. And I mean, and that's what he did for me. And if you go to a traditional Latin Mass parish, I mean, the confession is so available. It was difficult to find, you know, because they had like, the parishes had like confession on Saturday from like 4 to 5.
Right.
And then the priest, you know, was saying like the 5 o'clock Mass or the 5:30 Mass, you know, had to rush out of the confessional. It was crazy.
And that anonymity is great, isn't it?
Yeah.
To be behind the screen, the church really knew what she was doing. And I
never found like these rigid Catholic priests or the confessional as a torture chamber.
That's right.
You know, I never found that. I mean, priests, I don't care if they wore the cassock. I mean, they had the cassock. They were just happy I was there.
As you said earlier, it was the liberals who denied your absolution, not the conservatives.
Right. The priests were just, they're just happy I was there.
That's awesome. Thanks be to God. Now, what would you say, Joseph, you know, for those who don't have that mystical gift, I mean, you didn't know they were demons at the time, but you're in this emergency department,
yeah.
And you see these demons, like, those who want to exit the gay lifestyle, but maybe there's no magic bullet except running from it. So let's say someone's made it back to confession, but they still feel these physical addictions to sins. For those who don't have that mystical experience or quote-unquote, the advantage of you being laid up in your in a bed in your parents' place as an adult, for someone to nurse you back as that prodigal son. I mean, how do you extract someone from this neighborhood that you're in who even does have that super amazing conversion of Mary Magdalene or St. Mary of Egypt or Joseph Chandra?
I've never seen anyone have, like, an Augustinian, I don't know if that's the correct term, like, that sort of conversion, like St. Augustine, where it was kind of like, you know, you sort of, like, read and struggle, and I've always seen it more like Paul, like me, where, and that's rough for parents to hear.
In the gay community or everywhere?
In the gay community. Because it's hard. It's hard to leave this.
Okay.
Because you're leaving everything. Okay.
So how do you, what would your advice be to someone who wants to leave?
Yeah. I got an example. Somebody that's into like alcohol or even porn.
Right.
They can give that up. They're not going to lose necessarily their wife and their kids and their house and their job.
Right.
When you leave gay, you are leaving everything behind.
Okay.
Because I did. I left. I know it's an evangelical term, but it was kind of like being born again.
Yeah.
Because my friends, my entertainment, my community, my job, my school, my interests, everything was here.
Right.
So I had to start over. And people aren't going to do that unless they have a really good reason or they have no other choice to do it. And I really didn't. It was like life or death. So it's, and my parents don't want to really hear this because they're kind of, they want to, you know, they want their kids out if they're Orthodox and they're conservative. And I do tell them, pray like there's no tomorrow for that person. But they have to get to that person in the gay lifestyle. They have to get to that point where they've just said, I've had enough.
Okay.
And if for everybody, it's different. I knew a guy that was in kind of a more stable, kind of monogamous relationship, and the guy cheated on him, and it was devastating to him. It happened to me, and it wasn't devastating to me at all. But it was very devastating to him, and he started to question the whole gay experiment. He started questioning this whole world, and he got out.
Is that maybe why the suicide rate is so high? Because if that's your whole world, this guy cheats.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And mental illness is very high in this community. Triple what it is.
Triple.
Yeah, triple what it is among straight men. Because it is very devastating here, because people do come here with a lot of hopes, and it's they're unfulfilled. So
for straight guys, you mentioned porn a little bit ago. For straight guys addicted to porn, what advice would you have for any listeners out there?
Oh, boy. Okay, well, the way that people access pornography is through the computer. It's not like in my day when it was through a magazine.
Gas station.
Yeah. So you gotta unplug. But, I mean, people give the excuses, I can't unplug because everything else work and, you know, whatever, that's how I communicate with my kids and my wife.
That's right, that's the common excuse.
Yeah, so I can't do, well, I say get a flip phone so you can still call them. I guess you can't text message. But I don't know, if you've got this disease, I mean, if you had cancer, you wouldn't be like, you know, and the doctor said, you know, you got to do this and this and this, you wouldn't say,
that's
well,
right.
I'm only going to do this.
Yeah. I'm new to Twitter, but I put out, this was one of my only few witty tweets since I have, like, very few followers, but I said, better to go to purgatory with a flip phone than hell with a smartphone.
Yeah. And I've met couples, heterosexual couples that have this issue. Women see it. This is different to men and women. Women, we're getting into a different topic, but women see it as a violation of the marriage covenant.
Absolutely.
Men don't.
Right.
I didn't cheat. I didn't go out and cheat. Women don't, because I've talked to women,
yep.
and they
yep.
say, yes, you did.
Yep, that's right.
They see it that you're lusting after another woman, and men don't see it that way. So, yeah, men got to get their act together.
Now you
and wait, and you know this too, Father, as a priest. I've talked to priests, and they haven't revealed anything that goes on in confession. But they said the number one confession sin that they hear from men is porn.
So, you know, you have a lot of YouTube videos, Joseph, but the one with the most, it's almost 500,000 views.
Oh, yeah.
That's a tribute to dead gay porn stars.
Oh, yeah.
And when I first started following you on YouTube and Facebook, maybe 6 months or a year ago, when I first saw the video, I thought, oh, this is a scare tactic. And then as I watched further, I realized you really love these guys. It is, probably.
It's
but I realized perfect. You really love
they,
those
they
guys.
Are forgotten.
Okay.
They're forgotten.
I mean, you look around at all the smiley faces and rainbows.
They're inconvenient.
They're inconvenient.
I saw this in the build-up to Obergefell, into the legalization of gay marriage. I saw a deconstruction, especially specifically of male homosexuality, the media in combination with the LGBT agenda, political activists like Human Rights Campaign, who were headquartered right here, they were actively trying to rework from the 1970s, which was like the Village People, these sweaty guys, which I think is much closer to the gay male experience, very sexual, into like Ellen DeGeneres, even though she's a lesbian.
Or Ellen Grace.
Yeah, and
funny.
Nate Berkus or Neil Patrick Harris.
Right.
This very sort of waspish, bourgeois, you know, look. Oh, it's no different. And the American public pretty much bought it. Why should we deny these people? They're just like us. They don't, nothing different. It denied HIV. It denied STDs, mental health. All of these issues that the gay community had, they were willing to sacrifice the health of specifically gay men to get gay marriage.
Okay. And now, I didn't study this before we had our talk, but I had heard that, you know, Scandinavia had legalized gay marriage, and they had an uptick in it, and then 20 years later, nobody wants it. I think it's because of the promiscuity, but it sounds like it was just a political stunt, and then it dropped off the planet, because it's not like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, since you knew this lifestyle so well, they never wanted marriage in the first place because of how promiscuous the approach to sexuality is. Am I correct?
Yeah, it's only about 9 or 10%. And after Obergefell, you would think these people had been waiting decades. It only went up a couple of percent. Because, like here in California, they were getting married before that.
Right.
So, and I would say that with those studies, they don't differentiate between men and women.
Okay.
And I would say the vast majority of those that are married are women.
Is that because they have more stability and less promiscuity?
I wouldn't say more stability, but men do not nest. Women like to nest. The thing that I noticed about when I was here was the restlessness among gay men, the wandering from porn shop to disco to bathhouse. You didn't see that in gay women at all. It was,
right.
It was the exact opposite, where they very much wanted to couple up and have a more stable relationship with them, although they have more violence and they also have problems with obesity and drug addiction. And but no, men don't, I would say heterosexual men don't want to do that either. You talked about that. Women, and this came from a gay guy, I guess, Randy Shields, women are a moderating influence in culture, and here, where you don't have it, you're asking for proper food.
Earlier and I were talking about just how you were raised and the catechesis, and I remember from one of your videos you had mentioned in that sort of 70s catechesis, they portray Jesus as very wimpy, and I think you and I would agree it's super important to portray Christ as merciful and tender as he truly is and was, but it's also powerful, it's also important to portray Jesus as he truly is and was, that is to say, the most powerful man and the most just man who ever lived. How was it really, how do I put this? It didn't sound like there was anything for your mind to really come back to.
In terms of Jesus Christ, to me, he just sort of seemed like a failure, or like kind of like the ultimate social justice warrior. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way he was portrayed, and I was just kind of like, this guy, I don't want to follow. We kind of had more like more redeeming sort of gay gods in the gay community, like guys who had died of AIDS and struggled through it, and what I thought, you know, died very nobly. So that was more attractive to me than the way Christ was portrayed, kind of like. But I go back to that film Godspell,
right,
with Jesus with the Superman T-shirt. It was so bizarre. But that's what we were fed.
Yeah.
And it wasn't hard. It wasn't difficult to leave. It wasn't difficult to not be Catholic.
You know, in the Bible, we have these terms. You can find that Christ has redeemed you. He is redeeming you, and he will redeem you. He uses all three tenses in the New Testament. So we wouldn't want to, you know, say that you're fully redeemed yet, but obviously the cross of Christ goes deeper than any of the sins that you have committed. There's the old analogy, of course, of like, you know, a piece of wood and a nail is a mortal sin that goes into it, and you pull that out and there's still the hole. And that hole can get filled either through sacrifice or fasting or purgatory. And so, you know, are those holes always going to be there for some people till death? In other words, do you think same-sex attraction is incurable for some people? And what would you say to them?
Ooh, that's a tough question. No, it is not incurable. God, you know, healed the blind, raised the dead. This is easy for him.
Amen.
If we have attachments, and I'll use myself as an example. If we have still attachments to being gay or the gay community, that's us. And it's been difficult for me to break away. And it's tough for guys who are ex-gay, because a lot of times straight guys don't want to befriend us.
Okay.
And it's not because these straight guys are like homophobic or anything, but a lot of times they have their own family and they have kids. They don't really probably have male friendships anyway.
Just too busy.
Yeah. So what happens a lot of times is we've set up, and I don't mean we, but I mean people who are ex-gay, we kind of congregate together, and a lot of times that's not good.
Okay. So what would you suggest in place of that, or just make sure it's chaste, or what?
No. Well, no, you can have those friendships, because I have very...
Yeah.
There are men that were here with me in the gay community. We didn't necessarily leave at the same time, but we found each other later. And
post-conversion.
Oh, yeah. They've been such a comfort to me, because a lot of times they're my eyes and ears when maybe I'm not seeing things correctly. But...
Or do you reach that point of maturity that you can be friends with someone who is in a dangerous lifestyle again? Is it just after years of suffering in chastity? Or who do you suggest the people out there listening to who've come out of gay that they befriend? Because usually I hear the basic advice is find good straight men.
Exactly.
As you come out of the gay lifestyle, exactly. You find good straight men. But that's tough because they're busy.
I've asked heterosexual Catholic men to befriend. It sounds so bizarre. To befriend somebody that is ex-gay, trying to get out of the life. Because this is how a major change came in me. It was also through the priest, because the priest, you know, mentored me, and he, you know, he showed good masculine, because he's, you know, of chastity. But also at the same time, I got to be friends with heterosexual men. And was in a marriage with children.
Okay.
And this is a revelation, because when you see that, when it happens well, when you see the synchronicity and the harmony between male and female, and then even maybe if they don't have children, and you do start to think, wow, this is God's plan, and isn't it beautiful when they have children? And even and there was a lot of healing for me just in observing, and it sounds like I'm a voyeur, but I mean I'm just observing it with the relationship between men and their son, and okay. Seeing how good it is, and that was kind of a healing for me.
I noticed that your screensaver is Joseph looking down at Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just even looking at that.
Yeah, I mean Joseph has been a great comfort to me. Because he's just the ultimate father. Everything we need in a father, everything we need in a priest is in him.
Yeah.
And so that's the onus is on Catholic men who yeah. really need to reach out. I don't know how you do it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Well, let me put it this way. When someone contacts me, and these are Catholic people that are conscientious and understand what the Catholic Church teaches. They're not facilitating. They're not having a party when somebody comes out.
Right.
And they want to understand. And say it's a boy that's gay, it's always the mother, it's always the sister, it's always the aunt.
You mean the one celebrating
the contacts?
Disorder?
No.
Oh,
that contacts me and
right.
says, you know, dear Joe,
right.
my son,
right.
my brother, my nephew is coming out gay. I don't know what to do.
Okay.
Because I don't agree with it. I don't know. It's never the dad. Ever. And one of the first questions, and it's never the brother, it's never the uncle. And one of the first questions I always ask, okay, where's dad? Are there any men in this guy's life? Does he have an older brother? Does he have a brother?
And what's the most common answer that you get?
A lot of times is yes. A lot of times it's dad is fed up. Dad doesn't know what to do. Dad is upset. Dad is this. Dad is that. Or, you know, the brother is just the same thing. Doesn't mm-hmm. know what to do. Brother, this is part of the problem. There's no men. This is why this boy went to the gay life in the first place. He's got no men in his life. So it's a failure. This, and I don't mean to have another cliche, homosexuality is a failure of masculinity. It's a failure of fatherhood.
Okay.
And I laid it at their
fantastic. Foot. And not to just come up with easy answers of the two crossroads of the problem, but so we have to augment fatherhood and decrease porn. And, I mean, who's better to do that than the fathers themselves to guard their kids from pornography?
It's tough because I have a man that said they watched pornography with their father, or that the father, or that they father watched porn, they watched porn. It's not a big deal. That's a whole other topic. That's
right.
That's where the whole family is sick and dysfunctional.
And
God forbid
right.
somebody in that family, I don't care if it's grandma, grandpa, somebody's got to start praying, because I believe
that's
in
right.
the power of prayer. Because
yeah.
the thing that saved me from the homosexual lifestyle was my father praying specifically the rosary.
Okay, and that's actually the lead into my very next question is, when I gave my transgender sermon a couple months ago, I said, spending time in adoration and the daily rosary is the best healing for all yes. sexual wounds for your family. It's the best healing for all generational curses in your family. Find time to get to one holy hour a week, on top of Sunday Mass, on top of daily Mass. Or if you're really struggling with a major addiction, get 2 holy hours in a day, 3 holy hours in a day. I mean, people can spend 5 hours a day on Snapchat or Twitter or Facebook. They can get to adoration. Another thing I preach is 5 decades a day to keep your hands pure, 15 decades a day to keep your mind pure. So the rosary is this really great weapon. Now, on the other hand, I do have a good friend who struggled with same-sex attraction his whole life, and he was, after his conversion, he actually had his conversion in the charismatic movement and then found his way a bit towards the traditional movement. Wow. And really a huge part of his healing was adoration and the rosary. But yes. he admitted to me once on the phone, he said, but he really couldn't seal the deal on everything that had to happen in his heart and mind for chastity until he had a community to plug into, even after all that adoration time, even after all the rosary time. I think you use the word vulnerability. I know that's an overused term in the kind of the 20-year-old Catholic world nowadays, vulnerability. But he needed a community with whom he could be vulnerable yeah. about his temptations.
Yeah, it's good. You do need that.
So would you suggest that community be straight men or ex-gay men?
Good luck finding it with straight men. Courage is very good if you have a courage chapter, you know, in your diocese, because I mean, why courage was good to me, or good for me, is because when I left here, I was like, well, does anybody do that? What do you do? I mean, there's no like, okay, there's a gay world, there's the Castro here with shops and restaurants and theaters and
right.
political, you know, activities. And, okay, there's a world here. Okay.
Right.
When you leave it, what do you do? I didn't know what to do. There's no ex-gay world. So courage, at least, at the very least, so there's, at least you go to a place and you go to a meeting where there's other people that have left. And at least you're like, wow, okay, I'm not the only one.
Right.
So that's what they do. If you want to go deeper, then, you know, you need to do that.
Go to New Ways Ministries or Dignity, right?
No.
Just kidding.
So then you go to, like, so, you know, then you go to, like, reparative therapy, like the late Dr. Nusikalosi used to do. But I wanted to say one thing about how you're going to get people out of this life. Because that's the answer people want. If people ask me one question, how do I get my son? How do I get my daughter? How do I get them out of the
right.
life? Well, you're not going to get them out of life. God's going to get them out of life. But the way that you help it along the way, and this is what people don't want to hear, you got to take a hard line, and that doesn't mean, you know, you're rude to them or mean or anything like that. But you don't have the boyfriend over, and you don't go to the gay wedding. And things are going to go bad for you right away. They're going to get mad at you, and they're going to
probably walk. Cut you off.
They are, but things are going to go bad for you because somebody's got to suffer for that person.
Okay.
And my dad suffered terribly, you know, physically. Every day that I was in the gay lifestyle, he suffered. He suffered. He's like the prodigal father.
Way to
my dad, and my he did it.
I really
and that's what got me in. And I had no idea. I hated my father. I thought my father was judgmental, critical. I thought my dad hated me. I thought my dad didn't think about me. But when I came home, my mother was like, "Oh no, your dad prayed for you every single day." You know, dedicated rosary. My dad would pray, you know, all the decades of the rosary, all the mysteries of the rosary, every day for me. And when I thought about that, and I didn't think about it at the time, I was like, oh, okay, that was nice. But when I thought about it later, I was like, wow. Because the stuff I was doing, I was always like amazed. How on earth did I survive it? I survived because my dad was praying for
me. It was the rosary that brought you back, and you didn't know it.
Yeah, it was also keeping me alive.
Okay.
But a lot of people don't have that. And those are the ones my heart go out to because it's like, wow, they don't have anybody. What hope? What hope do they have? So as a parent with a gay child, are you willing to suffer for him?
I really like that.
Suffer physically, like illnesses, you know, whatever. Are you willing to suffer and offer that up for him? That's tough.
You know, I like that because when people say, I want to go to this gay wedding because I'm the practicing Catholic, and that I'm their one rope back, and if I'm the face of Christ who's rejecting them, not going, I'm never going to make it back.
Usually
my explanation is the first great commandment has to come before the second, but your answer is even more accessible, but it is going to hurt. It's going to hurt to not go, and that's the redemptive suffering that begins the very thing that's going to bring them back. Because who does it really hurt more to not be there? I mean, of course, if some boy marries his boyfriend and dad's not there, it's going to hurt that dad just as much as the son. But the difference is that dad's offering reparative suffering united to Christ across this land. So, Joseph, what would you say to a mom, a dad, a brother, a sister who knows someone has gone the LGBT direction? Do you put the dirt under the rug, or do you talk to that person, and how?
What you do is you tell them that you love them, that you'll always love them, and the door is always open to them. But I cannot stand by silently and watch as you do something that I know is wrong.
So does that mean you quote the catechism and say you're going to get an
STD? No, just say it like that.
How?
Just say that I know that you were not, that you were born for something more than this. Just say, hey, I don't believe you were born gay. You're born.
And when they inevitably say, this is how I was born.
I just wouldn't get in an argument with them. Mm-hmm. I would just say, this is what I believe. The door is always open to you. If you don't want to deal with me, that's fine. But you can always reach out to me. But I can't stand by silently. And that's what you're going to have to do. And I always tell this to parents. I say, if you have the boyfriend over, you have to be silent. If they get married and you go to the wedding, you're going to have to be silent. When they one day adopt or do IV, an in vitro baby, you're going to have to be silent. Okay, you're going to have to be silent.
I mean, they should be, or they should?
No, you're going to have to be.
Oh, they get involved.
No, just look at it this way.
Yeah.
If you start out and say, okay, the boyfriend's welcome at Thanksgiving dinner, you got to be silent about it. You can't burn it. Okay. When they get married, you're going to have to show up and be silent. You're just going to have to keep being silent. If that's what you want to do, that person will never get out. You know, they're never going to get out of life.
Right.
Because there's no reason for them to get out. Because nobody's pushing up against them. Nobody.
Okay.
So what you need to do is, like my dad did with me, what you need to do, I can't stand by anymore. Now, if that person gets out of the life, like happened with me, you know, a miracle happens and they went out, who are they going to call?
Do you think maybe that's the problem with New Ways ministry and dignity, is that it's afraid to suffer with the person who wants
to? Father, it's complicated because they don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Oh, that's right. That's the first.
But the person that's going to call is going to call you. It's going to, not necessarily, I don't mean you, but they're going to call that person who was the mean guy.
Because once they really realize they need surgery and not a jacuzzi, they're going to go to a surgeon priest, not a jacuzzi priest.
Right. So there, and that's what I did. I went home to my mom and dad because I didn't go to my gay friends. They would have just said, "Hey, shake it off."
And isn't it amazing that the one man who wouldn't let your boyfriends around is the one who brought you back in when you were unable to walk?
Exactly. And I also tell this to moms. I say, okay, step back. This is between your son and the father. And if the father is completely out to lunch and checked out, it's going to be hard. But because women, I think, okay, women are like this. I'm going to love this child. This child is hurting. The women, with mothers, because a lot
and
of mothers
love whoever they marry is the line they use.
No. When mothers, no, that's not what I mean.
Oh.
When mothers, when a boy comes out, mothers always like, I knew
sure.
all the time. I knew he was born gay. That's because that was the boy that she loved, that she tried. Because that was the boy that she could see was really hurting.
Okay.
And she said, I'm just going to love this
okay.
child. I'll love this child. The father is like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And they really don't know. So I try to tell moms, kind of keep out of it a little bit.
Right.
And this is between... And again, dad's got to step up. I'm asking so much out of fathers... But like a priest should give. I know I'm getting.
It's all right.
I'm sounding so sanctimonious. But I mean, like a priest should give up his life
yeah.
for his flock. A father's got to give up his life for his children.
True. And in a real practical question, then, you know, let's say a 4-year-old boy is showing really effeminate tendencies, playing with dolls, putting on bathing suits or whatever. Does the dad just remain present, or does he go for that, like, gotta get him hunting, gotta get him fishing, gotta get him boxing gloves? I mean, which approach is better?
I would say an over-involved father is much better than one that's not involved at all.
Even if it's not boxing gloves and shotguns, just
I longed
yeah.
as... This is what you have... in the gay community, you have these very odd venues where you have reenactments. There's a barber shop right near here called Daddy's, and it's like a very manly place to go, because when you're a young boy and you're like a pre-homosexual boy, a barber shop is kind of scary.
Okay.
Because it's like men here. We're kind of like, because you're like this wimpy kid.
Right.
So you have, but also in just the realm of the sexual, I saw this where you have these reenactments of where like the sex clubs, and I'm not going to get into it, but where they look like a mechanic's garage or things
okay.
like that. So you're trying to go into these environments that you felt barred from. As a boy, this is like the male world the locker room. I mean, gay men have all this stuff about locker rooms, and
even the big bears out there.
Oh yeah, because even in that's like the YMCA. That's where the whole Village People song came from. It's because here in San Francisco, I mean, not so much now, but at that time, the YMCA and the showers was like where you hooked up. Because that was like this place where you always felt so nervous and so scared.
Okay.
Because this is like the male, masculine world where I'm not welcome. We're welcome.
I see.
Because I didn't feel that, you know, as a boy. And unfortunately, some boys end up going shopping with their mothers
mm-hmm.
and all this
mm-hmm.
stuff. And getting into this very female, and unfortunately the church... The Novus Ordo Church has become very female-driven.
Absolutely.
I think. I mean, you don't even have altar boys, you know.
Always taken over.
Yeah. So, I mean, that world is very feminized, too.
Absolutely.
So, again, you come here because you didn't have that as a boy. So, fathers, you know, come on. Get off the couch watching TV, watching sports.
That's right.
You know, do stuff with your son. But it sounds like a cliche again, but like, you know, fishing, whatever, going out on boats, hiking, and maybe leave mom at home with the sister and let them do, you know, their stuff. They just gotta do it. It's
great.
But I don't, it's tough. With good fathers, I see it.
When I was shocked when I read Meg Meeker's book, Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, and obviously that refers to daughters, but really, and then there's, I think, Let Boys Be Boys by Dr. Meg Meeker or something, but the similarity, how fathers should treat sons and daughters, is just time. You don't have to be the coolest dad, you don't have to be the funnest dad, you don't have to be the most sporty dad. You just have to be there for them. And
yeah,
it just
right.
seems like the time is more important. I think that there's such perfection in everything that people, unless I've read this book and I know how to play this sport with my son and everything, they shy away from it and let their sons just be on Snapchat or trombone lessons or, you know, soccer and 15 other sports because they don't feel adequate. And the fact is, kids are just looking for their dad to be present with them, even if the dad's awkward, can't shoot a basket or do anything. They just want him to be there.
Correct.
So, Joseph, we'll just, anything else you want to wrap up with today? Any final thoughts?
I have a lot of men that are concerned, and they write to me and say, and these are, you know, these are men that are very conscientious, and they say, I'm worried about my son. But I tell them, if you have a good relationship, I never met a gay man that had a good relationship with his father, not once. So I said, if you have a good relationship with your son, he might have other issues, I don't know, but that one isn't going to be one.
Okay. Wow.
So yeah, men, but also Catholic priests, and it's tough for them now, especially in this day and age, but Catholic priests need to go out of their way. I mean, what an important thing for me was when they did just have altar boys, and I was an altar boy for just a little while, but that was like the only time that I was in contact with men and other boys, like in an environment where like I wasn't going to be teased. So, I mean, priests need to go out of their way to be fathers to young boys.
Yeah, you think of the old 50s movies, Going My Way.
Yeah.
But the scandals have made it very hard for priests to spend any time.
I don't blame them, because what do you do?
But we can still follow those biological fathers who are, you know, fathering their children. We can guide those fathers to spend quality time with their sons.
This the gay issue, and more young men will turn towards homosexuality unless men, because, you know, gay people are not, they don't come out of a cabbage patch.
That's right.
You know, they are born most of the time. I know things have gotten complicated now, but most of the time they come from a family with a mom and a dad. So they're the ones that need, and I tell parents that they need to be holy. So mom and dads, they need to be holy, personally
right.
holy. They need to work on themselves.
It's the number one determinant of everything.
Yeah, and then just the love and the compassion, and they'll be able to help their children. I mean, my mom and dad, and specifically my dad, did the best he could with what he had. And I'll leave it with this. Fathers, lay down your life for your sons, because if they end up here, it's not good. You're gonna lose them. You're either gonna lose them to the gay world, or you're just gonna lose them because they're gonna die. So you gotta lay down your life for them. It's on you.
Amen. It all comes down to that. So Joseph Schomburg, everyone, thanks for having me to San Francisco, and thanks for being on our podcast and our little vlog that we're starting up here. And Joseph has an awesome website at josephschomburg.com. You want to spell that for everybody?
Yeah, Joseph. My last name, Sciambra. So josephschomburg.com.
And on the podcast, you'll have to just type that in. But what we'll do is we'll put it right here for the vlog for everyone to look at. God bless you. Thanks.